This is Brother Hansen from Truth Lamp Ministries here in Lakeside, Arizona. It's good to be here with you today. We're going to get right into our study in the book of the Revelation. John's Revelation and of the end times. And, you know, some of it could have been immediately after while he was alive and after his death. Actually, I don't want you to discount any of this. Now, in chapter 9, we left off chapter 9, I believe it was. In chapter 9, verse 1, star. This must be an angelic being. It's especially considering that the term fall, usually used in apocalyptic literature, when a star is representing an angel. Now, we can go back to the several chapters, and we can look at the seven stars that are heading up, or actually over the churches. I don't believe they're pastors. I believe they're angels. That, you know, they're angels in operation as we speak. And this would confirm that those are angels and not pastors as well. The apocalyptic literature confirms it very much. And it's representing an angel. Such representation goes back to ancient ideas, which we saw before and we'll see again in Revelation, that angelic powers controlled the various forces in heavenly bodies in nature. And the abyss in this chapter, this is the pit called Sheol, by the Hebrews, Antartarus in Greek mythology. 2 Peter 2 and verse 4 uses the actual word Tartarus in the Greek text. It is the place below the world of the dead. The world of the dead was called Hades, where the wicked are punished. Hell's basement, so to speak, the apocryphal book Enoch identifies the angel having the key to Tartarus as Uriel, actually, the book of Enoch. If we studied that book here a while back, it's been about a year, I believe. We went through the entire book of Enoch. Now, you got to have patience if you go through the entire book of Enoch, but we did several times. Actually, we went through a study on the book of Enoch several times, and it's a very interesting book. And Enoch identifies this angel having the key to Tartarus, or key to hell, as Uriel. The New Testament has borrowed this concept to describe the place where the fallen angels are imprisoned. That's in 1 Peter 3 and 19 and Jude 6. Now, in 9:2, chapter 9, verse 2, the smoke is consistent with ancient conceptions of the abyss. The woe John is about to describe reminds us of the plague of locusts in Egypt. John also draws from the apocalyptic Old Testament writer Joel, who described a swarm of destructive locusts as a day of clouds and thick darkness. Now, in 9:3-6, these are unnatural locusts because they are not to harm the grass of the earth or any plant or tree, which, of course, the natural diet of locusts. Rather, they are to torment those not previously marked on the foreheads with the seal of God, the Holy Ghost. They make them suffer 5 months because of the... This was the natural lifespan of a locust. And the locust wounds were like that of a scorpion whose sting was painful but rarely fatal. These locusts make the people suffer but will not kill them. Now, the suffering they cause will be so bad that these people will seek death and not find it. 9:7, the appearance of the locust was like that of horses ready for battle. Joel describes locusts by saying that their appearance is that of horses, like steeds. They run, Joel 2:4. So we find that it's consistent with the rest of the Bible, these descriptions that are in John, and they're in very much agreement with John and Joel and lots of the other prophets, Ezekiel. They wore what looked like crowns of gold. This locust swarm represents something connected quite possibly with royalty. It's not royalty itself, but these were only like gold crowns. This signifies that these locusts attack with maybe imperial authority. I don't know. Human faces? Why would they have human faces? Well, there's a lot of animals that have human faces. There's even these creatures in heaven that have human faces. So we can't argue with that. John's not representing here some impersonal force. See, evil has a human face and always will. These locusts represent an evil of human doing. As we accumulate clues, we will draw closer to naming this evil. 9:8, the first part of this verse is reminiscent to an Arabic proverb that says that the antennae of locusts looked like a maiden's hair. If you can put that in your mind, that's a hard one. And a maiden's hair. The second part comes directly from Joel 1:6. These are further descriptions of this monstrous evil which affects humankind. 9:9, additional descriptions of the locusts that are coming, drawn from Joel. This is but a reiteration of what was said in 9:3 and 5. Now, 9:11. They had as their king, these locusts, as their king of the abyss, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in Greek, Apollyon. Now, where's he get this? The name of their king, a demon spirit? Now, we come to the key to identify this horrible evil. The Hebrew word Abaddon means destruction. Was used another word for death, or the place of the dead, Sheol, Hades. It is true that the Greek Old Testament translated Abaddon as Apollya. But John says that the angel's Greek name is not Apollya, the usual Greek word for the destroyer, but Apollyon. Apollyon spelled this way occurs only here in ancient Greek literature, meaning that this is the form of the word which John has constructed for use in this verse. Here is the key to the identity of these locusts. Apollyon is a deliberate pun on the name, quite possibly the name, of the god Apollo, who was symbolized by, among other pests, a locust. Thus, John has been describing the suffering and the inner decay, not only of the Roman Empire, but the entire world, caused by this selfishness and debauchery brought on by its idolatry. Like locusts that eat crops and bring destruction upon the Agrarian society, these locusts from hell, representing Roman idolatry and idolatry of man in general. They've eaten their away at the heart of society until its collapse, Roman collapse, and man himself under imperial protection and endorsement. The religion of Rome and its empire also brought suffering to Christians, as you remember, and to many others in the eastern provinces of the empire. So he could have been speaking of present day as well. 9:12, John is saying, if you think that was bad, just wait. There's more. Now, this is something that's more coming. He must have had in this vision more evil on its way. So get ready, is what he's saying. Get ready. When the average person thinks of idolatry, it's a village ritual, or India probably comes to mind. Or on the other hand, we use Paul Tillich's definition of God as ultimate concern. We realize that Wall Street, just to take one example, is full of idolaters who sacrifice even their own marriages in the name of making money. So idolatry is something that's a very universal term. Maybe sophisticated, but idolatry can match our own present-day sophistication. So, it's not something new. I mean, it may be old, but it's always recognizable. If you look hard enough, you'll find idolatry in every society and civilized society as well. Well, I'm going to stop there. We'll take up this sixth trumpet in chapter 13 tomorrow. And go to our website, krciradio.com, and you can find many of these, because already uploaded. And be sure and call us, leave a message. Our phone is hooked up again, 928-368-6766. Give us a call. Let us know you're listening, please. Also, write to us, KRCI Radio, Box 424, Lakeside, Arizona, 85929. So be sure and get a hold of us. Let us know you're listening. Till tomorrow's broadcast, this is Brother Hansen saying, study, show yourself approved to God.